Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Happy Friday. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. I'm going to start doing Fridays like a review night because I think it helps us put everything into order, a little bit of organization in regard to all the things that we talk about. Because just like what goes on in my head, I have a tendency to jump all over the board. And when I reread some of my own notes and I think to myself, my gosh, there's so much stuff out there, I could probably talk for a very, very long time about just all the unkindnesses. And then today, which is foolish of me, I watched a show about women who are incarcerated. And the years and generations, I guess is a better word, of abuse that happens in families is scary. After I watched this show today, I'm not going to talk about this show because it was too graphic and too heavy for me to deal with because I'm not a bona fide shrink and I'm not a psychologist. I am just who I am, and I believe that we need to be kinder to each other. But I hear some of these stories and I think to myself, gosh, how did that go on for years and years and years and years and years? And I guess that is what we're talking about. A lot of our unkindnesses have been going on for years. And the scary part is that a lot of times it's locked into generations of a family. So one night maybe we'll talk about that, and I'll do some serious research on how many times the people that throw their lives away because of hurt and anger, where they end up, and how many of their forefathers have ended up in the same seat. I'm going to open up Shelley, even though I'm going to read some of the things that I read this week, just so I feel like she's here with me. Hi,
hey,
Shelley.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing good.
Okay, so I'm gonna start tonight by reading what I started with on Monday, and that is the little thing I wrote about the ladies in particular that were kidnapped. It's what got me on this train of thought.
Right.
So
the name
of this paper I named Imagine. Imagine you have been taken away from all you know, mom and dad, siblings, home, all that makes you, you. Then imagine that someone continues to take more of you day by day, your safety, your freedom, your innocence, and replaces all these things with fear, sadness, and desolation. Days go by, weeks go by, months and years go by. Eventually, you give up ever knowing anything else, ever again. Abuse becomes commonplace, as well as pain and discomfort. Your pride is deep in hiding. Your self-respect is a distant memory. You spend much of your time in a dead zone, where you feel less and care less. In the beginning, you really believe someone will rescue you. You know people miss you, love you, want you back, and yet no one comes. Tell me, would you pray that a stranger would be observant enough to see the signs that you are not where you are supposed to be? If a person knew something was strange about where you were or the look of where you are kept, would you pray that someone told someone? Anyone? What if you were allowed out and someone saw bruises or just fear in your eyes? Would you pray that someone cared? Imagine this person is your loved one, your child, your sibling, your lifelong friend. Would you pray that someone would care? In the last several years, we've read stories of children being kept in tents and makeshift lean-tos in backyards, children being forced to reproduce and live like animals, young girls being taken into slavery and used and abused to extremes that I don't have words for. The latest horror story is one of too many. Three young women kept for 10 years, kidnapped separately, living in a neighborhood that has maybe 10 to 15 feet between each house. Garbage bags over windows. It'd be hard to put a garbage can over a window. Garbage bags over windows. Front doors that do not open. Garbage that must seem strange after a child is born and three women reside in hiding. People had apparently visited this house. Yet, no one knows about these poor prisoners. Now we hear stories that a woman was seen, or hearing screams, or strange things. But imagine, no one really cared. Or they would never have been locked away for 10 years, would they? Imagine, a world that is aware and observant and really cared about every living being. A world where you could never secretly hurt anyone behind closed doors. Because people would care enough to see and tell. I believe, as usual, we would all want to feel safe and be safe. There are sick and damaged walking amongst us. People who possibly were hurt first and really need to be secured and helped in whatever way that will keep us all safer, them included. Before we work on that problem, we have to work on caring enough to get involved and being observant to what is in our surroundings. Life is what we make of it. We have all heard that saying. And we're making a mess, people. And the messier it gets, the harder it is to clean up. Now, that's what I read Monday night, and our discussion was really about, for starters, these three young women, and then we talked about some of the things that have happened in the last 25 years in regard to people being taken away from what they know, and we talked about Stockholm Syndrome, where somebody feels like this is actually where they belong. The people that have taken them have actually brainwashed them into believing that this is where they're supposed to be, and the people that they were stolen from obviously didn't care. They would have found them. And, of course, when you are kept in a cocoon like that, you pretty much believe everything that's said to you when you have no other input. And I think that that's what's happened in a lot of these cases. Shelley, we talked, I'm going to break down each day so that we can talk a little bit about each night again and just remember some of the facts that we establish in regard
sure.
to paying attention to what's going on. This
right.
show that I watched today that I mentioned that I'm not going to tell facts about actually showed several, not one or two, but the one story that they told about a young woman who has gotten life in prison. She, when they went through her paperwork, when they were trying to punish her for what she had done at age 19, somebody sat down and dug through hospital reports and things like that. She started being abused at birth.
Wow. Oh, my God.
And there were hospital visits, and there were doctor's reports, and there were reports that they showed these papers right on the screen of the television so you could read the writing about what happened to this woman. By the time she was five, she was actively participating in sex.
Oh, my God.
And then
wow.
schools even had records of things she would do in schools, things she would act out, and she'd get punished. She'd be the one that got punished because she'd act out the only thing she knew. And it
right.
made me think more and more about about the things that we're talking about the fact that the scars for some of these people who need more help than any of us can even imagine, and maybe more help than what's really available today, I don't know. But other people know, other people who sit in seats that should have a little bit of power beneath them, and they don't do anything. It's beyond shocking.
It's
deplorable.
And you know, the whole thing is that, you know, when we talk about subjects like this on this show, it almost takes your breath away because you get to the point where you say, oh, my God, this is such an insurmountable problem. It's so huge. It's so, broad-reaching. What's the point? You know, what can ever be done? But the truth of the matter is that if you keep yourself in check, if you don't allow yourself to go to that hopeless place, it's very important to realize that every single person that does one thing differently can change the world. Because if you start being a little bit more sensitive to other people's feelings, a little bit more observant, you may be the person that talks to that one person or smiles at that one person or notices something and reports it and saves somebody's life, and it becomes a ripple effect. It's like it really does put out an energy that causes it. And
that's
the
right.
More of us that take it to our heart that there is a problem out there, and it all stems to caring about each other. I mean, it really is such a simple, like what Izzy's doing, it really is just a simple problem. The more we care about each other, all right, the mm-hmm. people that are damaged and that inflict pain on other people will become less and less and less, because the more people that are out there proactively assisting the people that are injured will prevent another generation of growing up of people that were injured and now are going to become the perpetrators. And a lot of what's happening is exactly that. A lot of the people that are the people that we despise, they're the ones that are doing these terrible things. When you look at their history, all kinds of stuff was done to them. And it's like a vicious cycle. It just keeps perpetuating forward. So as we start stopping the cycle younger and younger and younger, we're going to be moving forward into a generation that over years and decades will become healthier and healthier and happier. And eventually, this will become something that's not so prevalent in the news all the time.
Well, but one of the things that has to be touched on in this conversation, I believe, is the role of the people in our world that decide this is who they want to be and this is what they want to be in that professional arena. I want to be a psychiatrist. I want to be a psychologist. I want to be a doctor. I want to be a teacher. Maybe we need to start, as we're teaching again, and we're bringing young people up in the world of professionalism, we need to say, look, this is a big job. This isn't just about sitting for an hour and collecting $500 for an hour to sit and listen to somebody. That's mm-hmm. a fallacy. What this is a major involvement in someone's deepest, darkest secrets. And if you're not prepared to get in there and help make a difference and help, if you can envision a sinkhole. That's how I think of somebody who's in that state of depression and anger because of the way they've been being treated. They're trying to climb out of a sinkhole. And if you're just going to stand up on the ground that's safe and say, so how is it down there? Are you doing better today? You know, how are you? You know, get a good grip with your foot and push yourself out of there. That's not what happens. Somebody's got to stick their hand down there and pull that person out.
Right, right. Well, what are the things that would be something that, you know, would be worthwhile looking into is that a lot of times, you know, you're working at a company or whatever, and you see these outside agencies coming in because they want to teach the staff about health and safety because they want to reduce the insurance rate for the company. So they're coming in there and they're teaching the staff. You know, why couldn't it be done along the lines of what you're talking about of going into agencies that deal with these types of matters and retrain these people? Go through like a mandatory adult education unit, where if you're a police officer, if you're a doctor, if you're a social worker, if you're a psychologist, there's this, you know, you have to become more self-aware of these types of issues because they're so prevalent in our society. If you have somebody that comes to you and they're this fearful and you see this look in their eye, you're going to have to be taught the ways of asking them deeper questions, but make them feel safe so that they'll be honest with you. Because a lot of times, you know, sometimes when you hear these stories, you hear that people have tried to help them, but they're so petrified they feel nothing's wrong, you know. Mm-hmm. And a trained professional should know that there's absolutely something wrong, and maybe pursue that a little bit more. Maybe go by the person's house, even if they're telling you there's nothing wrong. You can tell in the tone of somebody's voice if, in fact, there is something wrong, and they're just saying that out of fear because they don't know what's going to happen if they ask for help. You know?
Yeah, but you're talking about something that is well disguised, and that is a harder path. Something that is that's really disguised well. I mean, you know, like we've all seen the movies of the person that's being battered, and nobody batters their face or their arms where somebody can see the bruises, or somebody that has deep, dark episodes that have happened to them in their life, and they've never shared with anyone, no one, except the perpetrator knows, and that's the only one. Those are really, really, really hard cases, and those take somebody, like I'm talking about, who is really dedicated, and again, who cares enough to reach down that sinkhole and help pull somebody out instead of just, you know, watching them sink further and further in the struggle to pull themselves out. However, there are simple, easy things. I mean, the stuff I watched today, you got a report right there made by doctors and nurses that say this, this, and this, and still nobody did anything. Now, that's not a hard problem.
And they sent her life or something?
Say that again?
What was her sentence?
She got, well, the woman that actually killed a six-year-old girl after she'd done some horrific things, high on drugs. She was only 19. She got a death sentence, but then in the state she was in, their governor pardoned a whole bunch of people on death row. So now she's in prison for life. But when other people got involved, they found all this history on her. And it was horrendous. And this was all in the court records. It doesn't stop what she did, because then it was too late. She still had to receive, you know, punishment for taking the life of a six-year-old child.
But that's the point I was making earlier. If somebody had helped her when she was younger,
right,
she would never have grown into the person that would have been so damaged that she could have killed a six-year-old.
That's right. That's the whole point. And again, it's not something anybody had to go over to her house and see. They had records. They had hospital records that said this, this, and this.
So doesn't her past.
Uh-huh. And she also beat and sexually molested one of her own children that they ended up taking away from her. And she didn't even get anything. Nothing happened to her after she did that. But the saddest part for me was that nobody helped her. At age 5, she's being raped and sodomized and all those kind of things. and beaten and sold to the highest bidder for a night by her own mother. I mean, this is all in records that they read. And I'm like, so, and nobody did anything for her. They put her in foster care where nobody watched her because it was like a group home. And she became friends with somebody. And the first thing she did in a foster home was hold down another girl so that a bunch of guys could rape her. Because this is all this woman knew.
Right.
But if they had stepped in at age five, maybe all those people would have been saved. All
right.
of them. And when we talk about caring, it's just like the people that saw somebody in the backyard of this Castro's house and noticed it and just chalked it up to none of my business. And all these people that read these hospital reports that, again, sat in seats of power. A bystander, there could always be reasons why a bystander doesn't get involved. We all know that. We've talked about that.
Right.
And or whether they're second guessing themselves or whether they think they're right, and do I want to ruin somebody's life? What if I'm wrong? What if this child is one of those kind of kids that you read about that throws themselves into the walls? I mean, you know, you can understand a bystander being hesitant about getting involved. But how can you give that same leniency to an official in a hospital or an official in a social working position or
exactly.
any of those people. That's
exactly.
unforgivable. Unforgivable. And of course it leads in, you know, all of that leads in to the other things that we talked about all this week. Even the night that I read about people being intimidated. I'm going to read that because it kind of leads into this. Have you ever felt like someone was staring at you? Not because they think they know you, but because they're trying to intimidate you. Does it bring up old wounds from new schools or even new workplaces? Even the strongest and most comfortable in our own skin, people, can be unnerved by those type of stares. I don't know if there is a throwback look that can turn the tables, but I think maybe this would be an opportunity to build on our own self-esteem and maybe smile at this person and say, hey, that's not working anymore. Now, you know, you want to talk? Anything. Start up a conversation. Or like Izzy says, are you upset with me about something? Do I know you? Now, if you've been hurt this way and you're thinking it's not as easy as you think, you know, of course you're right. It's not easy. But not much is when we're talking about things like this and confrontation and feeling like you need to fight for your own safety. Not anything that is unsure ground or conjures up old memories that still have that old familiar sting is easy. But every time you do something, what happens? It gets easier, that's what. Also, something that has helped me is an occasional reminder to the man in the mirror or the woman in the mirror that I'm a loving wife, a good mom, a great friend. So if there's someone out there who doesn't care to find that out, that's their loss. Something else that you may or may not be ready for is remembering how lost a person must be to want to make enemies instead of friends. Now that sentence right there could be one of these people because
uh-huh.
they don't know how to be a friendly friend. They only know how to get attention in a way of you know, daring you to be their friend or pushing you against the wall so they feel like they have the upper hand. When you meet somebody like that, it's a sad sign, and a sign that screams loneliness and wounds. Being able to forgive is one of the most enriching and strength-enablings you can give to yourself. What a perfect gift. And you'll wear it well. But it isn't as easy as it sounds when you have somebody standing there giving you what my grandmother used to call the evil eye. So it's those people, though, that are out there that needed help so, so long ago.
Right, right.
And nobody ever answered the call. Nobody ever answered the call. And now we see generations and generations of people. You hurt me, so I'm going to hurt them. I hurt them, so they're going to hurt the next ones in line. It's
exactly.
Like the most horrible domino effect that there could ever be. And yet we know, I mean, it's proven statistically, it's written in books by famous psychologists and psychiatrists. You know, you can read them all the time about people who even choose professional grounds to be able to hurt people with that. I mean, you hear of the nurses that become nurses so that they can, you know, so that they can hurt people. Or,
yep.
You know, and it's all about starting from the very beginning and doing what we're talking about, paying attention to what's going on around you, caring enough to do something, even if you feel like you can't. Nobody ever got hurt by an anonymous phone call.
Right.
Nobody.
Right.
And to let authorities know that something is wrong someplace, you may be saving, who knows, 4 or 5 generations of people.
That's right.
Now, the next thing that leads us into, of course, is all these domestic violence statistics that I read the other night. And the... the lecture that I listened to Patrick Stewart give, which is on my Facebook page, if anybody would like to see that. And then,
yeah,
of course, I
haven't seen that yet, but I want to.
Yeah, it's very moving, and you understand where he's coming from with his own mom. And of course, there are always extenuating circumstances. I think every one of us know somebody who, under the influence of alcohol or drugs or both, can be abusive. And a lot of times people make that excuse because when that person is clean and sober, they don't hurt anybody. So then there seems to be some kind of granted forgiveness. But I always felt that if somebody did something to me that was really hurtful when they were drunk, that's how they really felt.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any proof that that's true, but because drugs and alcohol get rid of your inhibitions, it seems to me that if you are a cruel alcoholic or somebody who is... doing some kind of drug. A lot of the drugs that people take today just put them in a zone and they don't, you know, I guess some people like being there, not me. I'm too busy trying to be in charge all the time, so it doesn't do anything for me to think about that.
Me too.
Yeah. But some people like that state of oblivion.
Yeah.
But if you are living with someone who is like a weekend warrior who gets... messed up on the weekends and is abusive to you, then you need to talk about that too. It's not okay, and drugs and alcohol are no excuse for you to be hurt for any reason. So, but this domestic violence statistics that I read the other night also scared me. Every 9 seconds in the United States, a woman is assaulted or beaten. Every 9 seconds, Shell. How many 9-second interludes are there in a day?
I know.
If there's 60 minutes, that you gotta figure what, seven an hour? No, that's not right. That would be minutes. 9 seconds. Oh my God.
Yeah, 9 seconds.
There's 60 seconds in a minute. Yeah, 60 times 60 would be 360, so then you'd divide 9 into 3. That's like 70 an hour.
I know. It's shocking, and it makes me get nauseous when I think about it. I actually feel it right in the pit of my stomach. you know, because it's, you know, and as far as the drugs and the alcohol is concerned, I believe that there are some people where the drugs and the alcohol reduce their inhibitions, and they really are angry or resentful or something. But I think for the most part, people that get violent when they're drinking is because it actually alters your psyche, depending on specifically what drugs they're doing or if they have a bad reaction to alcohol. I've seen people who were actually very, very sweet people, and then they drink something, and they were genuinely sweet people. If they stayed sober for 2 years, they were sweet people for 2 years, and then they drink, and they would just get mean. It warped them. It actually did something that made their brain not work right anymore, and they would get angry over nothing, you know. So I believe that in some instances it's bringing out like a natural propensity, but I think in other instances it's actually causing almost like an alter ego to emerge, a drug-induced alter ego that's not really who that person is naturally. Because there's too many people that have given into violence when they were drinking or doing drugs and had such heavy-duty remorse, and when they got clean, they stayed clean because they never wanted to go there again. I've read a lot of these stories, so, you know, so I don't know if it's, but I do believe that sometimes it is the natural propensity surfacing, other times it's that the drugs or the alcohol actually alter the person's chemical makeup and actually brings out an alter ego that's not their true nature. So there's a little of both of that going on, depending on the individual you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, but the point is that neither one. One, it means that they need more help than you thought that they needed, and the other just means that it's still not forgivable, whatever the reason is. It's just like the woman that I'm talking about that I watched the show about today. I know. They interviewed her several times, and now, of course, she's clean and sober, and she's been in prison for, like, I don't know, 19 years or something like that of a life sentence. And I'm listening to her talk and I'm looking at her, and she's still, you know, kind of, she tried to say that her boyfriend did everything, but the proof was there, and the fingerprints and everything. And when she was high, she told them the absolute truth. But now that she's clean and sober, it's very likely that she's buried all that so deep because she can't live with herself. But it's not, no matter what happened to somebody, you can't make allowances for them. You know, I mean, you know, if you walk up to me and punch me in the nose and I turn around and punch a perfect stranger in the nose, that's not the way it works. You know, it's not, you know, it's just not the, I don't know, the... Socially speaking, when we talk about our social activities and the things that we do so that we all get, you know, play nice in the playground together, there are certain things that are unacceptable, and that, of course, would be one of them. So I don't quite understand. And this lady got no forgiveness, by the way. It's not that that happened to her. She was, like I said, they still put her on death row, and then that got lifted. But some of these other women, the ones that I read about, around the world, at least one in every three women has been beaten, coerced into sex, or otherwise abused during her lifetime. Most often, the abuser is a member of her own family. Now, that's unforgivable as well. Domestic violence is the leading cause of injury to women, more than accidents, muggings, rapes combined. Now, isn't that awful?
Oh, it's well, first of all, I never in my wildest imagination thought the statistics would ever be that high. So
I know.
That's nothing short of you know, shocking to begin with. And, you know, I mean, when you hear these statistics and you hear, you know, one every 9 seconds and things like that, and then you start doing the math, you know, one every 9 seconds sounds bad enough. And then when you actually do the math and you realize how many thousands of of people we're talking about in any given day, it's like you said, that's the whole point of the show. Something's got to change. Something has to change dramatically worldwide. There has to be a shift in consciousness. There has to be a shift in, and it doesn't have to be a shift in every single person. It just has to be a shift in a lot of people, and it ends up, you know, like on a grassroots level, it just ends up spreading. The more and more people that care, the more and more people will care. It's almost contagious.
It's about personal responsibility.
Yep.
And remembering that you can always be the one in the other pair of shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Just like when I read Imagine, it's just like anything else. If it's you, it always seems different, and it always seems worse, and it always seems either worse or more important or bigger or somehow different than nobody else could have possibly lived through what I've lived through. You see that attitude in every one of us. Nobody else could have possibly had all this horrible stuff happen to them. Poor me. And that's not true. It's not true at all. And if we don't understand that and look around us and have even 15 ounces of empathy in our bodies for the other people that are standing around us, this will never work.
That's right.
This will never, ever work. You cannot put a whole bunch of individuals that are so totally different. Like I said on one show, DNA proved that we're nothing alike, and we don't want to be carbon copies of each other. We like our individuality. I like the fact that I cry at Bambi still at 64 years old or a Charmin commercial. I like that about Rainey. I like that I get laughing so hard that I nearly choke to death and my grandchildren all sit around and laugh at me laughing. I like that about me. I want to be different and I want to be who I am. But on the same token, I want us all to have one thing that will make us compatible, and that is consciously be aware of the man standing next to you's discomforts and pain. You don't have to give him an aspirin. You don't have to give him a massage. You don't have to give him a dollar. You don't have to do anything like that. Just care.
That's right. That's right.
Just that little bit, and something good will come of that caring. Our friend Gary posted something today on Facebook. He's probably going to shoot me, but I'm going to see if I can find it because
it's posted on Facebook.
Well, and it's so cute what he wrote because it's so him, and when I read it, I cracked up. It says, "Who am I? I feel like I am an overachiever, which has its pluses and minuses. I don't give up easily, and I get so determined to make things happen when things seem like they are not. I'm always looking out for others to protect them and keep them safe, yet I feel I have to push the boundaries to do so. I motivate and inspire people to keep moving on, even if it gets overwhelming. People must think I'm weird because I give too much of myself to help others. I have to admit, I love who I am, and I am proud of what I do to help make life a better place for those who feel their lives are hopeless. My name is Gary Leifer, and I'm a kick-ass."
Oh, I like that.
And the comments are cute because he has a lot of followers on Facebook. And somebody writes, "Yes, sir, you are." And I wrote, "Yes, you are," and funny, too. So, he got a whole bunch of likes and everything. But it made me laugh because I thought to myself, "What? There's absolutely positively nothing bad about that. That whole, everything that he said about himself is the way we all need to be. And, and who we need to be. So I think he should be. Well, he said he's proud of himself, so I'm not going to worry too much about him. But he should be proud of himself, and he's very involved in the Bully Project too, which I think speaks volumes about who he is. And, of course, he's been an avid supporter of our show as well. And he listens a lot and he calls in. And he has a very full life, so I think it's very special that he takes time out every night to listen for a few minutes. But
exactly.
That's what it's really about. That's what it's really about. I don't expect everybody to have the answers. I wish sometimes, I wish I did. I wish I could say something magical and so profound that it will change somebody in a split second. But that's really not the way it goes. And sometimes all you can do for somebody is just be there for them.
Right.
And, but if you're oblivious and think you're the only one that's ever going through anything, then that will never happen because you'll never see it in anybody else because you're so wrapped up in yourself. And it is important to take care of ourselves. I don't want to say that that's not important. That is important. But the truth of the matter is you become much more well-rounded and much more valuable to yourself when you are valuable to others.
Of course, of course. That's mm-hmm. a very, very good way of looking at it, you know. And when you are also, and this is something that always surprises me, but when you take the time to look outward, to not be preoccupied with your small circle, you find that through perception, you know, putting things in proper perspective, let's say not perception but perspective, by putting things in a better perspective, you start realizing that, you know, in any given moment, you're going to meet a person that has more than you, has less than you, has experienced more or less than you, all right? But each person has their own ups and downs. So, you know, deal with what's in your life. Don't compare yourself to other people because you may look at this person over here and say, you know, they have $100,000 in the bank, but you don't know all the other stuff that's going on in their life. You may be better off than them in other areas, you know? So don't compare yourself to other people on an isolated piece of information, you know, because no two people are the same. No two people have the same problems or the same benefits, okay? And I know a lot of people that have no financial issues whatsoever. They're very wealthy, and yet they're still not okay with their lives. Their lives are still pretty messed up, you know? So that's not even the answer all the time, you know, to be financially solvent, although it helps all the time, you know? And
yes, and I'm ready, willing, and able if anybody wants to do anything about that to make my life like that. And then I'll test it for everybody. And I'll let you all know.
Just so you all know. It's out there now. But it is a matter of just trying to have a little bit more realistic contentment with your own life and mm-hmm. being grateful for what you have. And strive for what you don't have. If there's something that would make you happy, that would make your life fulfilling, instead of thinking of all the reasons why you can't have it, just start being creative. Start looking at ways that you might be able to do this fulfilling thing or talk to people that have it. You know, it might surprise people sometimes that they can do more with their lives than they think they can. But we limit ourselves with our own attitudes. We limit ourselves with scars that we don't allow ourselves to heal from or move past, like you said, you know, forgiveness. Forgiveness mm-hmm. is really for us, not for the person we're forgiving.
That's right. That's
yeah.
right.
And but you know, one of the things I love about this show is that we talk about the fact that people should care for each other. And mm-hmm. it sounds, you know, on the surface, it sounds kind of fluffy and you know, kind of like Walt Disney World and all that kind of stuff. But in the reality is, it's essential. It's essential for us to care about each
Absolutely.
Other.
Absolutely.
This world to go forward and to become a place where we're going to leave a legacy for generations to come. Because right now, we're in trouble. And you can't keep doing things the same way and expect different results. And what's going to change is going back to values. And the value is that we as a people care about each other, not just when there's a catastrophe and there's a there's a hurricane or a an earthquake or something that people band together, but just in simple ways on a day-to-day basis that we just as people care about each other, regardless of what the other person looks like, regardless of what religion they are, regardless of what sexual orientation they are, that we just sincerely care about each other. And if you see somebody that you think may need assistance, put it out there. You look like you're lost. You look like you're looking for somebody. Can I help you in some way? Hey, what is it? I've actually done that with strangers. I saw a woman who was frantically, she's looking like, I thought she lost a kid or something. It just turned out she had dropped something out of her wallet and was trying to find it, you know. And I wasn't able to help her find it, but just the fact that I asked her calmed her down and made her focus. You know, so I don't know if she ever found it or not, but it did put her in a better place. At least I asked her, you know. And it's sometimes, and maybe by me asking her, it might have calmed her down enough where maybe she found it. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, I didn't follow up on it. But the bottom line is she noticeably calmed down in front of me just by me asking her if she was okay and if she needed help with something. You know, just that little kindness on my part. It didn't cost me anything. I was just being aware.
And what it really did for her, honey, what it really did for her is it made her stop for a second, get her bearings, because somebody cared a little bit. And even if there was nothing you could really do, the fact that you noticed that she was a little disheveled and a little upset warmed her, gave her that instant feeling of warmth that all of us love so much and actually covet that feeling and yet are so stingy with it ourselves. And it's a wonderful feeling, even when you're, like we talk about, smiling at people. I'm ready to, like, say, you want to come over for dinner when somebody smiles at me some days, you know, because I'm like, oh, my God, what a sweet person, you know. All they did was look at me and smile. And I think to myself, you know, I wish there was something I could do for that person. Silly. It sounds silly, but it's the truth.
You know, but I don't think that people, and we've talked about this on the show before, I don't think people, the majority of people, understand how powerful something as simple as a smile is. We are all energetic beings, and when you smile at someone, you're putting out a particular energy that's actually felt by people that are around you. That's why we talked about it one night. You can walk in a room, and if there's somebody in that room that's really, really angry, you don't even need to approach them. The air feels dense. You can actually feel the heaviness in the room. I mean, we've all experienced that, you know? So it's the same thing when you walk into a room and there's somebody lighthearted there. You may not even know them. You're passing somebody in a parking lot. You're passing someone in a store, and they smile at you. It's extremely uplifting. And what if you smile at somebody who just had a horrible morning? You know, it's only 10 o'clock in the morning and 10 things went wrong already. And then and you look at that person and you smile and you get them to just stop for a moment and be okay. You could actually change the course of the rest of their day for them. And you read these kinds of stories where they've had been people that were in a very desperate state and a perfect stranger smiled at them and just kind of like put them in a better place. And who knows where their day would have kept de-evolving if not for that stranger smiling for them, you know. And you read these stories from time to time from these people that were just like, you know, their day was just doing a nosedive, and it got pulled out by a random act of kindness from somebody.
Well, it can certainly change everybody's day. There's no doubt about that. It can turn a rather I don't know, nondescript day even. Say you're not even really having a bad day, but there's nothing that's happened all day that was really noteworthy. And you make a connection like that with somebody, and it lifts you up. And but the point is here is that even if you don't want to do that, even if you don't care to make new friends or make somebody feel good, maybe that's just not the kind of person you are. It seems frivolous, and you think to yourself, I have enough family members and friends. I don't need to just pick random people and be nice to them, for all I know they're axe murderers. I know there's people out there that are thinking that right now in their heads. What are you, crazy, Rainy, walking up to somebody you don't know? You know, it could be one of Lizzie Borden's descendants or something, right? So, but... say you don't want to do that, and I respect that. I'm not trying to make mandates about being nice people, but I would like, if there was a way I could mandate that you all cared enough that if you saw somebody was in trouble or in a really, really scary place or something like that, even if all you did was make a phone call and say where you are, who you saw, what do you think's going on, and even say, I don't want to leave my name. I don't care.
Right.
But just if we could open the door to knowing that the days of, I'll never forget, my oldest son, Spike, just started driving. He's in high school, 11th grade, and we lived in Pompano Beach in the Highlands. And I wouldn't say it was an old-fashioned neighborhood. Everybody that lived in the neighborhood, all the kids make friends, so you end up knowing, you know, a lot of the families. But as far as knowing, like, every neighbor or anything like that, we didn't have that. But he's coming home from school, and somebody cuts him off, and he goes right into somebody's fence in their yard.
Oh, wow.
And I'm home from work already, because I would get home from work at about 2:30 in the afternoon. And my phone rings. Renee, I just saw Spike. He had a car accident 3 streets over. He's okay. Everything's fine, but he had a car accident. So
oh, wow.
I jump in my car and I drive over, and he looks at me. He goes, Mom, how did you know about this? I said, Mary from up the street called me and told me what happened. Are you okay? But, you know, those days shouldn't be gone. Those days should still exist.
Absolutely.
And very sadly, I think they're getting less and less every day. And that's a shame. That's really a shame, because there's something about that that gives us all a common ground. We all know that we love our families. We all know that we don't want to see anybody get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know that there's situations out there that aren't like that, and that there could be, you know, there could be stuff going on someplace, and if you do know it and you don't do anything about it, you're as guilty as the people that are perpetrating it. And
of course.
Don't forget that, because that's true. And you have to live in your own head for the rest of your life. You don't get to ever move out of your head. You can move out of houses. You can change cars. You can even swap your mate for somebody else. But you can't move out of your own head.
That's true. The bottom line is you have to, I've made this comment a couple of times, but it actually makes your life easier when you live a life of integrity, when you really do live by the golden rule, because then you don't have to feel guilty about things. And I'm not talking about mistakes. I'm not talking about making a bad judgment call. Everybody does that. I'm talking about people.
Absolutely.
Absolutely,
that's true.
Right. Yeah. I'm talking about people that will rationalize it's okay to do something that deep down inside they know is wrong, okay? And they do it anyway because they want this or they want that, or they manipulate a situation. And subconsciously they know, you know, because little hairs go up on the back of your neck, you get that feeling in your stomach, but yet they go through with it anyway. And then invariably, you know, a week later, a year later, whatever, it always surfaces at some point, and now they have this consequence they have to pay. You know, I mean, people create their own problems. But if you just live the life of integrity and always made this based on, you know, on, well, I don't want to be like spouting, but, you know, like morality, you know, you think something through. If it was being done to me, how would I want this being done to me if I was on the receiving end of this particular situation, you know, the whole golden rule thing. You know,
mm-hmm.
And then to be able to, it's all about being able to look at yourself in the mirror and saying, I'm okay with that person. And when you're okay with yourself, it makes it easier for you to be okay with other people, even with their foibles. Even you're meeting somebody and they have, you know, they're a little rough around the edges. When you're okay with yourself, it's easier for you to deal with the imperfections in other people. But when someone is not okay with themselves, because so many people lack the ability to take responsibility for things they don't like about their life, so they have to blame other people, then what they do is they become self-critical about everybody else in their life because they don't want to take that hard look at themselves. But the more contented you are with yourself, the easier it is for you to be okay with the imperfections in other people.
Well, I think that that's very true, and those are all valid points. And I think that learning to live with our imperfections is kind of a lifelong challenge, because our imperfections change frequently. And I do think that absolutely we're all in possession of those things, and recognizing them in other people. And again, realizing that none of us are perfect. And we've said that a million times. If somebody knows somebody out there that's perfect, please bring them by, because I'd love to meet them. I'm not even sure what perfect is anymore. Actually, if somebody asked me to describe the perfect person, I don't even know how I'd do that. I really don't, because I don't have a definition of perfect. Do you?
No. The only thing is, to strive for perfection is to strive to live the way where you are always making the best choice you can for everybody involved, you know,
mm-hmm.
for you, for the problem situation, for the best possible outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And when you make your decisions based on love, I don't mean romantic love, I mean love
right.
of people in general, okay?
Mm-hmm.
When you make decisions out of kindness and love, you will always make the right decision. You know, but when the purpose of doing
True.
Something is self-serving or out of greed or something like that, that's when it has its own seeds of destruction, and when generally you're making the wrong decision. So
mm-hmm.
a lot of times the motive behind a decision is almost going to dictate what the final outcome is going to be. And anytime you make a decision out of love and kindness, it's a creative force, and eventually it will work out, even if it doesn't look like it's working out in the beginning. If that's where your motive is, it will eventually work out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and that I think that's true of almost every decision we make, that you take into consideration the repercussions for the people that are involved, and you take into consideration the feelings of others and everything. I think that's very important. I've told that story before about my sister Barbara saying to her about if you're going to say something that's important, say it to yourself first. If it hurts your feelings or upsets you, you shouldn't say it out loud. And she was like, oh, my God, you do that with everything you say? And I said, no, we were just kids, you know. And I said, but sometimes I do. If I think there might be, you know, a problem with something I'm going to say, yeah, I do. I still do that today. I say it to myself first, and if I accept it in the way that it was intended, then I figure somebody else will.
Right.
We're almost out of time, and I want to mention Rita Romano's private dinner party, which is May 25th. I think that is next Saturday, a week from tomorrow. It's a wonderful thing. Rita Romano is the author of Dining in the Raw. And a lot of us go, a lot of us, I'm not a raw foodie anymore, but I am a vegetarian. Shelley is a very strict vegan. And it's a wonderful spread, and it's on Saturday, May 25th from 7 to 10, and you can contact Rita on her website, which would be foodbyrita.com, and if you have any questions, you can call me. I'm happy to help anybody, or contact me on Facebook. It's $40 per person donation. It is an awesome, awesome spread. So,
yeah. Well worth
thanks,
it. Well,
Shell.
Well worth
Are you going to come with me that night?
Yes, I'm 99% sure I'm on for that night. I'll let you know before the weekend's over, but I'm
okay.
planning on it right now, yes.
Okay, good, good, good. So it will be fun, and we always enjoy ourselves, and there's lots of good conversation, and it's a very enjoyable evening. So, thank you, everybody. I'm glad. I think this will be the way we'll always do Friday nights, because I think it's an opportunity to pull together some of the things that we talk about during the week.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still trying to figure out how to do some recordings of Izzy on Wednesday nights, and we'll see what happens with that. Somebody just called in. Hello?
I have a big piece of fucking shit hanging from my asshole.
Oh, that was nice, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was, I think they called in on the wrong number.
It was a strange number too. It was 111111111.
Ah, yeah, so they were masking their phone number. Yeah, so it was just somebody. Maybe it was one of these guys we were talking about tonight that's abusive to women. He didn't like some of the things we said.
I suspect that was a recording, though. That's what it sounded like. So, but I'm not going to worry about it. We're already off the air anyway. So good night, everybody, and God bless. Night, Shell. I don't know who all I got a hold of, but I'm going to call Diane again tonight.
Okay, fantastic. All right, and I will speak to you tomorrow at some point during the day anyway.
All right, sweetie. Bye-bye.
All right, good night, Rain.